special guest in the studio. In 1959, a young dub turned up to play his first game for Ireland with his football boots in a brown paper bag. He went on to score a goal in the 16th minute. And he hasn't looked back since, with over a fantastic career, which has seen him play at Manchester United, Leeds United, and become one of the most beloved TV personalities in our sporting world. John Giles, good morning to you.
Morning, Dermot.
Great to have you. You have your life story, people can actually witness now because it's a new DVD.
Yeah.
Do you remember that first day very clearly when you turned up to play?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget it because when I was a kid going to Dalyman Park over the years with my father, to watch the international team play, like most kids, you dream of playing for your country, and you know, this was the time of Jackie Carey and Con Martin, all idols of mine. And I went to Manchester United in 1956, and this was 50. So I was only 3 years after watching them from the terraces. And you find that most kids who want to go into sports, whatever it might be, you want to emulate your heroes. And actually, when I was in the dressing room with the lads, there was Noel Cantwell and Charlie Hurley and Pat Sayward, and they were my heroes. I'd never met them before, you know, but I used to go to Dalyman to watch them play. And, like, it's a great enjoyment to be sitting in the dressing room. You can't believe it, really.
Is it intimidating?
I didn't find it intimidating. No, because I was just short of my 19th birthday. And, like, in football, if you're going to become a professional, you have to sort of grow up quickly.
Yeah.
In a football sense, certainly not in the not in the real sense.
Yeah, life, you know, sense.
Because it's not a real world. But you'd believe in what you do. You know, you're a footballer, this is what you want to do. And you don't suddenly finish up in Dalyman playing the international team. You have an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
I went to Manchester and I was playing the juniors, then you're playing the B team, the A team, you get into the reserves, and eventually in the first. I only played twice in the first team anyway.
And you got a call up then.
But you've served an apprenticeship for that. And it's something you want to do anyway. I think what happens with most players, in my opinion, anyway, what happens with most players, they're usually quite modest people because you can't get carried away. But there's a bit of a show off in you as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you know you're good at something, then you want to show people. So it's the reverse from being nervous.
Like, all right, sure. So you want to go
playing the Gaelic match at Croke Park, I'd be a bag of nerves now because I know I'm no good. Be no good at it. But if you think, well, I can do this, I want to show people how good. Not in a showy off way, but that inner.
You've got that confidence. Yeah. Do you think it was more? You said it wasn't like the real world. Do you think it was more like the real world when you played, because, as you said, you did an apprenticeship, like the same way a lad would go out and do an apprenticeship to be a carpenter. You got paid a relatively modest amount, similar to somebody who started off in a normal job. It wasn't like today. Do you think that it was way more rooted in normality then than it is now, when, you know, an 18-year-old can be a multimillionaire?
Well, it was normal for the day.
Yeah.
Everything is normal for the day. Like, when I went away to Manchester United, you were in digs, for example. Like, before I went away, my mother didn't want me to go, was assured I'd be looked after and they'd go around and check it. That never happened.
Mm.
It was a survival of the fittest.
Absolutely,
to be quite honest. And that's what you did. Now the kids gone away, they're gone away, like the clubs are taking away at 11 and 12 to get them used to the club. And they're in hostels, better than any hotel, they're looked after.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely supervision on it because they learn from the Geordie Best episode in his time, who was from my time, but in digs, wasn't looked after at all. Now they're very, very well looked after. Mm. And there's huge, more competition now for young players than ever before. Actually, there's more young players coming into the game.
Everyone has that dream now.
Yeah. So it's a different time and a different way. And I must say, it's better in some ways. And it's not so good in other ways. I mean, you want to be a professional footballer. I want to be a professional footballer. I'd put up with anything.
Yeah.
When I went away.
Yeah.
Anything. I mean, people said to me, did you get home? Of course I got homesick.
Yeah.
But I remember coming home at Christmas, the first Christmas, my father said, you want to come home? I said, no way. You'll put up with anything if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Now, I think what happens with the kids now, in many ways, it's progressed, better for the kids. But like, there's a lot of kids now who are considered outstanding schoolboy players at 15, 16 gone away. And one of the big incentives for going to certain clubs is that guaranteed a professional contract
at 16, yeah.
At 17.
17, right.
Regardless of how they do, right? So there's a safety net.
Yeah.
Like when I went away at 15, you had 2 years to prove yourself to be signed pro, because if you weren't signed pro, you were on the scrap heap at 17. So there was no safety net. So it made you
hungrier.
Yeah, because you can't pretend to be hungry. If kids are guaranteed X amount, so some of them are, for 2-year contract, regardless of how they do, even if they're released, it has to have an effect
on
the ambition of what you're trying to do.
You mentioned George Best there and Man United. You joined Man United 2 years before the Munich air disaster, the tragic plane crash where so many of the Busby Babes, as they were known, were killed. What are your memories of that time, and how much did that affect you?
Well, I was a long way away from the first team. I signed pro in November, and the 57, and then it was 58. And this time, this was the Busby Babes time, where there was about 50, 60 pros, most of them top class, because they had the pick of Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales at that particular time. So I was nowhere near that group of players. I knew some of them. I used to be scared to go into the first team dressing room, you know, because you'd be shy. You go in Duncan Edwards and Tommy Taylor and all these. And some of them were very friendly, some of them not so friendly. But I didn't know them. So I was a distance away from the Munich air disaster, on a personal level. I knew Liam Whelan, who was an Irish lad, but I wouldn't have been close to those particular players. I was a million miles away from
them. But in the club, it would have presumably been felt all through the club.
Sorry?
The disaster would have been felt all the way down through the
totally,
club.
Totally. I mean, when we actually, the day of the Munich air disaster, I was playing the U team, and we were in training on the, I think it was a Thursday afternoon, and one of the old trainers was there afterwards and said, "Oh, boy, that's bad news. That's the plane has crashed coming in." But the way he said it, it was as if, well, it's held up. So I didn't know till I walked back to the digs how disastrous it was at that particular time. So we were told then not to come back into the club for 2 weeks. And even though a young player like me, they said there was a lot of funerals. We were going to most of the time. Actually, we came over to Dublin for Liam Whelan's funeral, so that's what we were doing for at least 2 weeks. Everything closed down, as you can imagine. But it was a dreadful time.
Yeah,
dreadful and time at the club.
In a weird way, did it fast track your career terms of, because now obviously the first team was decimated and they needed
first team and second team. Actually. Yeah, you know, like this was at a time when it was hard to get the second team. Like when I first went to Manchester United, I was watching the side the first team play the second team. Bobby Charlton couldn't get in.
Couldn't get in
at half time. Bobby was 17 at the time. Bobby's a wonder kid, because they just had so many players. So it definitely fast-tracked people like myself. I was playing, say, in the A team or the B team, which is the third and fourth team. And then I was straight away into the Central League, which is the reserve team at that particular time. And the reserve team was a really hard league, because clubs carried big squads in those days. So if you played Newcastle, say, in the reserve team, you'd know all the players.
Yeah, of course.
This lad was in the first team, and famous players would be in there. So it was a really good schooling for lads. I was put into the Central League straight away.
Who's the best player you ever played either with or against?
Bobby Charlton. Both. Yeah. With and against. Yeah, Bobby was a wonder.
And what made him so good?
He had this ability. You talk about ability in players. Bobby was very quick. He was a great dribbler of the ball. He had a great shot on both feet. From 40 yards out. Bobby scored 270 goals for Manchester United. From midfield. Bobby was a genuine midfield player. Right? He was unbelievable. And actually, he wasn't the most enjoyable player to play with, Bobby. You know, he was brilliant, instinctive in what he played. I played with him inside right. I was inside right, Bobby was inside left when I got into the team. And if you got a goal kick against you, you know, you normally balance up.
Yeah.
But Bobby would wander over.
Just do whatever he wants.
Towards me. Yeah. Right? And I said, push over. And I was 3 years younger than Bobby, you know, push over, Bobby. But after a certain time, he said, would you F off? Leave me alone.
You know what I mean? Your own patch.
He didn't want to. I played with Bobby, never had a conversation with him after a game about, like, we should have done this or we should have done that. Purely instinctive in the way he did. But it was unbelievable. Like when I played for Leeds, for example, I was with Bremner. Bremner was up in midfield. We needed each other to get up around the box. Bobby didn't need anybody. He'd just do it, he'd get it and pick it up on his own, he'd go on the dribble. Not all the time, but he was beautiful, distributed the ball on both feet. You wouldn't know whether Bobby was right footed or left footed. And had a shot. I saw Bobby scoring goals for 40 yards out.
And particularly the balls in those days compared to what the lads are kicking now, I mean, they were big, heavy.
Yeah, well, that could be a benefit, actually, really, if you were a good kicker of the ball.
Right, keeping it down. And
Well, it flew.
Right,
you
know,
you played on that with those balls on a wet day.
Yeah.
They got heavier and heavier as it goes. Now, if you were a good kicker of the ball like Bobby was, it was very difficult for the goalkeepers because obviously there was more pace on the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
When you hit them, it wasn't too good for the lads who weren't good kickers.
No, I know what you mean.
You know,
the documentary talks about your family life as well. And obviously, you know, behind every great man and all that, your family would have had to have moved around with you over the years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know how she put up with me, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
Like at one stage, I was in... I only just got married.
Yeah.
When I moved from there, we played in the cup final. I was lucky enough to win the cup final with Manchester United, having a bad time at Matt at that time, in 63. Got married in 63, and we moved to Leeds in 63. And we
didn't
Leeds for 12 years. Then went to Birmingham for 2 years, back to Dublin for 4 years, to Vancouver for 2 years, and back to Birmingham for two. So we moved.
Yeah.
We moved around a fair bit.
Speaking of Leeds, there's a text in from Ian and Talon says, lads, John is the reason my dad is a Leeds supporter, and that's why I'm a Leeds supporter. So cheers for that, John. Not. He says.
Well, I can understand how it's. Well, when I come home to Dublin, like, I was a Leeds supporter. I said, well, you have to be about 57, 58, 59 to remember the Leeds team.
Quite
a lot of them.
Yeah, definitely.
A few of the sons did. Unfortunately,
inherited.
Before we let you go, we have to ask you a couple of things, right? The match at the other night. Do you think we're a good enough team to play in the World Cup and to qualify for the World Cup? And what would you have done differently, if anything, the other night if you were manager?
I think we definitely have the ability to be as good as anybody else. I'm talking about our group now,
yeah.
For example. I don't think there's any great teams out there. In our group, there was no great team. I think we overrated them at times, particularly Serbia going to the first match. This was a fortress. Actually, it wasn't a fortress. They've been having a bad time. And the crowd weren't coming to the matches. And again, you hear like, well, you know, we're the underdogs. Why should we be underdogs? I don't like that attitude.
Mm.
I think we play as well as we can. We're as good as... And we prove that in the group. You know, because there's a thing in football now, a cliche... draw away, win at home, right? We didn't do that. We got more points away from home than
That's right,
did at home.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a question of taking each game on its merit. But definitely, ability-wise, I keep hearing, we don't have the players. We don't have world-class players, but neither does anybody else.
It's very few teams that really stand out, like, in fairness.
Well, look at our group.
And particularly, I saw the four pots for the actual World Cup draw, and you look at the team, you're going... We're better than a lot of these, or at least as good as a lot of these teams.
We underrate ourselves, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like if you look at Georgia, Serbia, and again on paper, Wales was supposed to be, we beat Wales away, we beat Austria away.
And
matches you wouldn't expect to do. All I'm saying is we play as well as we can.
Mm.
We're as good as anybody.
And
everything's on paper.
Are Martin and Roy responsible for instilling that confidence in the players then? Are they also responsible for bringing...
Well, the manager's responsible for everything.
Yeah.
You know, Manchester wins and does well, then he gets the credit. If you don't, but the manager's ultimately responsible because he encourages players to... It's the managers that actually say, when we're playing, say, away from home,
what the style is.
Take the game on its merits.
Yeah.
If we can get on the ball and play, let's play. Don't be scared of it, right? In other words, if you do what I want you to do and we lose the game, it's my fault. So you free the players of all their hidden fears, as it were. That's what managers do.
Yeah.
That's what managers are employed for.
What would you have done differently if you were manager the other night?
Well, you see, I don't. It just didn't come to the other night.
Yeah.
Right. It's over a period of time. It doesn't just happen on the night. Like I would criticise Martin from the start was that when you take over a group of players, you don't know who's the good ones, who's not really, right, until you see them play.
Mm.
And then after a period of time, after one match, say, well, Joe Bloggs is not as good as I thought he was. This guy's better than this. So after, say, 6 matches, 7 matches, 8 matches, you really have a good idea. This is my best team. And you talk about tactics in football. It's 4-2-2-4. Mm. The biggest tactic in football is recognising who are your best players in the possession, play them. Now, when you start to play them, then no team is perfect. You put that right, you put that right, you put that right. All bits and pieces, you put right.
Mm.
Now, I think what's happened with us, we've never had... the consistency of selection.
So putting out the best 11 every time, we haven't been able to do that.
No, we haven't done it.
We haven't done it,
But Martin, that's Martin's way.
Mm.
I think that's Martin's way of doing it. Now, if you go back to the other night, Martin had been with the team 3 years. This was one of the most important matches we ever played.
Yeah.
So definitely you say, well, I have to pick my best team for that. I wouldn't agree with what he did, but that's his opinion.
Mm.
So he picks the best team. But after 45 minutes, that's drastically changed.
Yeah.
The captain has been taken off.
Mm.
Art has been taken off. So we got McGeady coming in, hadn't played for a while, and Houlihan. who in my opinion should have been up in the start but wasn't. So there's a change of mind from within 45 minutes. What's the right team?
Do you think he should stay on as manager?
Well, I'd have mixed feelings about it, you know. Like, in many ways, he's done well. He qualified for the... I don't think getting to the playoffs this time was an achievement, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that was an achievement. I think Martin is putting it down as an achievement. I don't think it was. I don't think it was any great team out there. I think we'd have played as well as we should. We wouldn't have been in the playoff.
The Euros was different. You're getting there was an achievement.
Oh, yeah. That was got to the playoffs and got to... That's always an achievement if you do that.
Speaking of achievements, what's next for you beyond DVD? Have you any plans? Any dreams?
My plan is to stay alive.
You're doing a good job at that. Listen, you guys can make plans. Go see John. Easton's on O'Connell Street Saturday, 2 o'clock. He's going to be signing DVDs. And we have 5 signed copies to give away now. John, can you choose a word and get people to text it in on our text line? Any word you like.
Winners.
Winners. Like it. Text winners and your name and details to 087-4100-102.
That's what he sees when he looks at us, Dave.
Two winners.
That's why I'm here.
John Giles, thanks so much for coming in today. Really appreciate it. And best luck with the DVD.